You think you know about relationships, but you're wrong. Listen, there's no magic bullet. I'm teaching life skills.
When you're sick, you need medicine. It don't always taste good.
Nah.
But it'll get you better.
You
need this medicine.
Yeah.
It ain't gonna always taste good. But this is what you need. Men and women, bottom line, we need to have the conversation. Your partner wants to give up control, but only if you know how to drive. This is about being the best you could ever be. Whoever you are, I don't care if you're a man, a woman, LGBTQ, space aliens. I'll save anybody. I don't care. I'll teach a hedgehog how to have a threesome.
What do you mean by that?
Look, you don't have to listen to me, but you're wrong.
Listen, I know I'm great. And I know you're thinking, Dante, there's no way I could be like you. But you could be me, you know why?
Because you know who I was? Before I was me, I was you. You.
Man score 202.
Better hear what I've got to say because you won't get it again.
I'm not an alpha male. I'm not a beta male either. I'm just a better man. Better man.
Well, put your happiness first, because if you don't, they won't.
Yo, what's up? GYBB, get your balls back. WWDD, what would Dante do? The sexual revolution is being podcasted, and I am excited. It's about to go down. This is a special show, everybody. Now, I know I might have said that 400 times before, but this time I mean it. I'm ready to get it going. Harry, how you feeling? You good?
Yeah. God damn it, Dante. You don't have a right to ask me that question.
My bad. I'm sorry.
Well,
I don't want to.
Damn well I'm doing good.
I'm sorry. I apologize. But Andre, check Andre out on Slouch Theory as well as is his podcast Slouch Theory. He's not here today. He couldn't get it together today, and that's fine. We're all trying to grow ourselves, so Andre's not going to be on today, but we love him and check him out, Andre D. Thompson. You want to do the honors, my friend?
Oh, yeah, of course. He's a fantastic young comedian all over the place and currently part of this new scene in Miami. She's going to be part of it. She's blowing this thing up. The fantastic Brittany Brave, everybody. Put your hands together.
Thanks for coming, Brittany. Thanks for coming. We've been trying to get you on for a hot minute, and in Black People Talk, that's like 5 weeks. So,
thank you for giving me the measurements. Thanks.
I don't want to confuse anybody. So, thank you so much for doing the show. We've been trying to get you on a minute, and you're out in Miami. I did a show out there, so I know my buddy Kyle Grooms is out there.
Yeah.
You know, Kyle. So Kyle has been doing this huge show that kind of blew up, that he named it after a club that we did in that was in the Lower East Side called the Laugh Lounge.
Where
he had cut his teeth on there. I mean, he was a comic already, but that was kind of his home club, and so he named it as that. But I also did, Harry, do you remember the guys I did? There was a bunch of guys, some young guys who were doing comedy out in Miami. I wish I fucking knew these guys, but they treated me really good, flew me out there, and I did this room where they have bird cages all over the ceiling. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, it's a big warehouse and it's very eclectic.
I don't.
No. That sounds like a lot of clubs in Miami, actually. That could
really
be a number.
But good dudes out there, and it was like a real budding kind of a budding comedy. Huh?
Casa Tiki?
Maybe.
That had like cages and bamboo and stuff.
Yes. Okay. Big place. Big.
Big. Yeah. Casa Tiki. Yeah, Casa Tiki is great.
A whole bunch of different kinds of eclectic furniture all over, couches and shit. Yeah, it's like in a dead end kind of like up off. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Trip in Miami. Yeah. It's a great room. They have comedy there every Thursday now. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. That's dope. And they do live music and stuff too, I think. So that's dope. I'm trying to remember the guys that for me. I'll come. It'll come to me. But I went out there and had a ball, man. I mean, but it's a very young scene out in Miami. And Kyle came from here, but most of the comics have, I don't know. How long you been doing comedy?
So stand up, I'm going to hit 3 years this summer. My background's in, I'm an actress and I've done a lot of improv and sketch and stuff. So I know if you act stand-ups, they say that means
three. Yeah, that means absolutely nothing. We couldn't.
Don't tell people that.
But I mean, you understand why too, because now that you're doing it pretty steadily, it's such a different, you know, it's such a different, conceptually it's so different. It's just you and them. If you don't pull your weight, then you know it. And if you do, you know it, you know? So it's a weird thing.
Yeah, it's interesting because it was like improv. And the good thing about improv is that I feel like it made me super comfortable on stage quickly.
Yeah.
But when I started stand up, I was like, oh, whatever. I can get on stage. And there weren't as many nerves. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like the two things don't count. Like yeah. You could have 15 years of improv and it's like, okay, we'll go do this new thing.
And you're like, well, it's kind of the same thing. We get it's laughs. No. Yeah. But that laughs for a minute clock, as soon as you get on, hey, everybody, and it's click, click, it's click, dish, dish, you know.
Yeah, and then you go back to watch improv, and you're like, this is forgiving.
That was the best. That was the best
explanation of what improv is.
Oh, my God, that was so beautiful.
Because sometimes, you know what, when you're watching an improv scene, you go, all right, we're waiting for it. And then the scene, before you know it, the scene's done and no laughs happen. You're like, son of a bitch.
We never got it. Yeah.
Harry will tell you I hate improv. And not I don't think I hate, but here's my thing. You know, like when you watch like Wayne Brady and those guys, those guys are the Michael Jordan, like that's the highest level of that. And they stink a lot of times. It's just it's fucking awful sometimes. I mean, it's good moments, but look, you're rolling the dice every time and it's very forgiving, you know?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I completely agree. And there's something the way it's like fostered. Like I used to teach it a couple years ago, and I knew that I wanted to do stand up because I would just straight up tell my students, I would be like, that just wasn't funny. And I had improv teachers like, you're not in the business of being funny. It's about being like
committed and
present.
Come on.
Yeah, it is about being funny, you know. But you know what's interesting about that is being present is something like, so when you have comedians and stuff like that, that we're all trying to be like the better comics. I shouldn't say everybody, because a lot of them sunk, but the reality is that you know, better comics are trying to be present, you know. That's so yeah, you learn the funny, you learn the timing and the technique and stuff. But then once you learn the technique, it's being present, still maintaining the funny, still on that laugh clock, and still being in the moment too, which is, you know, it's like a whole, like, you know.
I feel like as a comedian and as a human being, I just being present is like a general goal for me all the time. And comedy's helped it, but also... Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
You find that difficult.
I do. Yeah. I've always been like, I find it difficult in social settings too. Like, wow. I always struggled with being like present, like fully there in a conversation or like fully there on a date or whatever. So it's kind of a catch 22. I feel like comedy's helping me get better at that.
Sure. Well, look, here's the thing. I mean, I no, no doubt about it. You are a cutie. So, I mean, but that's just. But
that's my mating call, Dante.
So the,
and
but
it works. That's the weird part.
It works. Yeah. Well,
you could go to any
when you're
bar
a little cutie.
That,
right. When you're a little cutie, you just do anything. You this could be your mating call. And they would go, oh, she's adorable.
I gotta send her a drink. But if you're doing that in reverse as a dude, just like.
Yeah, it's not the best thing. Did she freeze on you,
Harry? I think she might have frozen on us. Hold on one second. Let's see if Brittany froze. And let me put her in the waiting room and see if that'll fix it. Hold on. Brittany joining us. We lost her for a second. Let's see.
Okay,
there we go.
I'm, you know, living with your parents.
Yeah.
chapter 100. Yeah.
I'm doing the same thing. So if a group of elderly people come in here muttering in Armenian and and open the garage door midway through.
Yeah, that's crazy because my parents are dead.
And you're like, but they still do that, which is like,
no, you guys are so rough, but their minds are dead. So fuck both
they
of you.
Of old age, Dante. What do you want us to do? You're older than both of us. In all fairness,
listen, my parents are black. They did not die of old age.
That's true.
All right?
That's true. Your mom was 89, so she still had another.
No, my mom was 80. She was 80.
80? Yeah.
Yeah, so, my dad was 92, but it was still, you know, if he wasn't an American black, he would have lived to 116. Yeah. But you know, it is what it is.
The oldest man on earth right now, I think 120 years old, is a black gentleman.
Oh, well, of course. Yeah. Imagine if he wasn't black, but it's interesting. But like when you talk about being present, because one of the show, I mean, I don't know if you've heard the show, but one of the things I talk about all the time is being present. And it's like you meet, you know, we so many women that have come on the show and they go, you know, guys suck. I mean, they're not masculine. They're not decisive. They're not. And I go, this is the problem. It's because you don't even you're asking for something that you don't really think you deserve, you know?
Mm-hmm. OK,
no, go.
Okay.
Good. You're going to I plucked the nerve.
So you think that it's asking for qualities out of a man that maybe they're not even embodying in themselves on the reverse?
No, I think I'm saying the guy is, so he comes up to talk to you and in his mind, he doesn't really think he deserves you, but he's going, fuck it. I'll give it a shot. And then when you respond positively to it, then now he feels like what I call he's shoplifting the pussy. You know, like he's trying, you know, even if you do like him and for some reason he doesn't fuck it up, in his mind, he doesn't think he's worthy of your time, your energy.
He thinks he got lucky.
Yeah.
And then it's just pure
he
luck.
Can't afford it.
Right.
Yeah, right. Because he can't afford it. I always reference, I don't know if you ever seen that IKEA commercial with Henry start the car, where the lady comes, she goes in IKEA, she looks at the thing and the prices are so cheap. She goes, Henry, start the car. She's running it because she wants to get away before they realize. And I think that's a depiction of how guys really perceive themselves. It's like every time I get laid, every time I meet a girl, every time I'm with a girl, it's like I'm lucky. I'm rolling the dice and I'm lucky.
Yeah. In the jacket, they don't call it getting lucky for nothing.
That's a good point. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. Men always refer to it as getting lucky. I've never heard a girl refer to it as getting lucky.
She like,
not.
I gave him some.
Yeah. Yeah. We call it community service. Right. Yeah, we're putting hours in.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, but they think they don't understand what their value is, and then they're stepping up and asking for it. I always say, you know, say for instance, you know, if I go see a guy and I have a V12 Mercedes-Benz AMF that's worth $200,000, and I go, hey, you fucking punk, you bitch, you come drinking fuck, give me $100 and you can have this car. And he'll go, only $100? Like, he won't eat. Like, it's kind of the same thing. It's I understand that this car is worth more. And so I'm not even going to acknowledge the fact that you just berated me and called me all these names, because I know I'm winning if I get this deal.
Yeah, that makes sense. By the way, all of those names that you just dropped are just what I use as terms of endearment. For my
boyfriend. That's awesome. somebody's abusive.
Yeah. Don't call fool you, she bites. That's really interesting. That makes complete sense. That totally makes complete sense. I want to ask a counter question now.
Sure.
Because as a woman who I have now been single now for over 3 years, and I feel like a lot of my 20s and a lot of the dating I did in my 20s was punctuated by guys kind of liking the idea of me or wanting me around or having me in a certain capacity, saying it's all there, saying they don't think they deserve it, but never like locking it in. So I guess my counter question to you is like, why is it like, In the pursuit, I think it's In the Pursuit of Pussy. Yeah. And In the Pursuit of the Woman from a distance, you think you're not worthy. But then these guys get in these situations with us and they get this opportunity. And then all of a sudden we're like, well, now you're really acting like you don't right. even know what it is you have. Now
right.
You're
almost really, like you don't keep saying almost like you don't care.
You don't care. So that's what I'm saying. That you're like, in the beginning, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe I got this opportunity. This person's giving me, this woman's giving me the time of day. And I'm like, damn, like that novelty wears off. Cause then I feel like I've given these guys a chance and then they do have this access to me. And now I'm like, oh, now you really don't deserve it. Now right, you're right. really.
Well, that's a really it. Great question. And I have a really amazing answer for that. Because what happens a lot of times is, So this, I think there's two elements that are involved here. Number one is when you deal with abusive people, right? Mm-hmm. People are abusive. They come from abusive homes or if they've been whatever the fuck. And they know socially, the social dynamic of them operating is they are abusive people. Now, what happens with them a lot of times is in any abusive relationship, you have two archetypes. One is the abuser. One is the abusee, right? Depending on how abusive you are, right? Mm-hmm. If you're more abusive than your partner, they become the abusee. Yeah. You become the if you're both in you're both abusive, you right. become the abusee. And even if you're not the person, if the other person is not abusive or is nice or kind of stable, then they become the abuser because mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter what position they play, as long as the two archetypes are filled, because then that gives them a sense of comfort because there's a normalcy. Do you understand? Yeah. So you go, okay, in my relationship with my mother and I, or my father and I, he was abusive and I let him abuse me and I kept trying to fight for his or her acceptance and stuff. And that was the nature. And so even though that's painful and it's damaging, what happens moreover than not is that we seek those same relationships all over again. Yeah. Your mom's a bitch. You get a guy, he marries a bitch. Like he marries somebody who treats him like his mom, you know?
Absolutely. And I mean, that's all really true. That it's like, you know, everybody says you end up marrying your father, marrying your mother or whatever. Right. Because the shit is like generational. And it is yeah. like the love models that you grow up with. You're right. finding it and you're seeking right. it in your relationships. And
you repeat yeah. that over and over and over again.
Over and over and over again. And I mean, so much of this is because it's exactly what you said. It's comfort and it's familiarity. It's something that you're used to or something that you internally think that you deserve. Yeah. And even if you can objectively see that it's abusive or objectively see that the power is off, we always go for what it is we're used to. Because as human beings, we're wired to be like, well, I'm going to go down the path that I know.
Yeah.
Because why
yeah.
would I travel down a path that isn't clear? To me,
right.
You know,
right.
Is there a path that you followed in your relationships? You think repeatedly?
Wait, hold that. I want to give the other aspect of this.
Okay.
The other thing is also if I don't like myself, right? If I don't love myself, and then all of a sudden you treat me better than I feel I deserve to be treated, right? Now there's something wrong with you. So. Correct. So I go, well, I know I ain't shit. And she's treating me like a human being. She must be shit. And so you lose that credibility. And the only way you stop that is you really have to kind of call it, stop it. And then if there's no adjustment, you got to leave, you know?
Yeah. I have had guys say that, like guy friends and stuff. And I know I've been in this position as well, too, where I put up with certain behaviors that I've had my guy friends say, like, I don't know why this girl that I'm involved with is sticking around for my bullshit. And now at this point, it's not attractive anymore. It's unattractive, like to your point. Like, it's like, well, what's wrong with you? That you're, and I mean, that's like classic abuse and classic, yeah. like I was in super abusive. I was in two abusive situations. One was like really abusive for 3 years, physical, mm-hmm. emotional, mental, and everything. Mm-hmm. And that just maintains that power dynamic. Like they feel like a piece of shit. Therefore, they feel like they can abuse you. But then when you stick around and you put up with it, now all of a sudden they're like, oh, I really do have the power. And I do, and it's all now.
Well, like, you know, I have to push back. I don't even think that that is, it's really a conscious thing. It kind of just feels right. You know, I smack you in your mouth and you go, oh, I won't do that. And you go, this feels comfortable. And so even when it's painful, it still feels comforting because it's like you said, it feels familiar.
Yeah, and it doesn't even need to be this extreme abuse either. I mean, no. I think there's a lot of relationships. I mean, I think everybody here has been in a relationship where you're like, I put up with some shit for longer than I needed to because it's better than not having that shit.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. And so it's really not. I mean, I say this all the time. I've had situations where, I mean, like I had a girl, I'm going to tell the story. I had a girl that I was dating and then she was like, and I was like, you know, the sex was great in the beginning. And then all of a sudden I couldn't get no head. Right. And I go, but I don't do awkward. So I go, hey, can't get no head here.
What's up with that?
What's up with the hat? The head? You got no brain, no throat, no esophagus. I can't get nothing. And she was like, well, you know, I just feel like I'm not really good at it. And I go, well, I'm here to practice. This is what I'm here for. I'm here to help you out.
I'll be the judge of that. If I'm still asking for it, you're doing a good enough job.
Right. And if not, we'll get there. But so she goes, oh, okay. I go, okay, well, I said, well, understand. So one of the things we tout over and over is that relationships are really simple. You got to figure out what your non-negotiables are and then never negotiate them. And the thing is, I just want to be clear. Me being in a relationship where I don't get no head is non-negotiable. Now, some people will go, oh, well, that's, you know, it's just this. And no, I am in charge. I'm not making you in charge of my happiness. If this is something that's, I get to decide whatever, what's negotiable, you get to say you're down or you're not. I go, yeah. So understand this. I don't want to have this conversation again. So things were good for a while and then it started to wean off. I called her. I said, listen, we're done. We're done. Yeah. Well, why? I feel like we're communicating so much and we're there. And I go, well, then why is my dick not in your mouth? And she's like, why do you have to be so? I go, I'm not going to go through this. I mean, I understand how vulgar it sounds in a sense on the surface level, but it's the same thing with respect. If I want this kind of respect, if you don't want to please me, I don't want you to please me. If this is not what you want to do.
You can want whatever you want in a relationship. The thing is that all these relationships are elective and supplemental and additional and additive anyway. So it's like, you might as well, you can set those terms for whatever it is. I just got done working with, I worked with an intimacy coach for 6 months because in the wake of that relationship, and I have all this to say that I agree with you because in the wake of that relationship, I consistently kept landing myself in just like really shitty situations. And part of the work I did with this coach, I hired her because I was like, you know what? This is an area of my life that I'm not good at.
Let me get an instructor. Yeah.
I need a coach. Like, I keep picking the wrong partners. I keep putting up for stuff that I know in my heart I don't want to deal with. I'm not happy. I'm not getting what I want. Right. And one of the exercises we did was building out my ideal. And it was over the course of a couple weeks. And she says, you get to pick your ideal and your ideal is your ideal and it does exist. And she goes, and it can range from, I want him to have a good job and a good relationship with his family to I want a big dick. Like she goes, it can be whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it's like, and you know, you're doing that other person a disservice if you stay in something knowing something's missing. And
yeah, you're unhappy in it. Why stay for both of you?
Yeah.
What does an intimacy coach like cover? Like, how does this come about? This is an interesting concept.
Yeah. So I met her actually at, so I mean, they all coaches nowadays. I had the worst stigma associated with coaches. Like, I even therapy, like,
because you coached improv for so many years.
That's why
she was like,
you realize how little it takes to be listed as a coach. Oh, you've been doing it 3 weeks longer than the rest of us. You're a coach now.
Oh, honey, yeah. I was like, I go, I know how full of shit you are. I was a coach, so yeah. Yeah. No, but I feel like life coaches and stuff were just like social media influencers who bought a notebook and a pen, you know, like that's how I looked at them. But I met her at a domestic violence benefit.
Okay.
She has a history of abusive relationships just like I did. So I think I already like, you know, vibed
with her. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the only way it works. It's the same way with therapists too. They have to see you for you. You have to come in that office and they have to be like, I get you. Like, you know, I've been through something similar. I understand. But her whole program is helping young women regain their sense of agency in sex and intimacy and get what it is they want. But through like, I had to go on a detox. Like I took 6 months off of like sex and relationships and all of this stuff, and like I really had these tough calls with her multiple times a week, every week, about like, what are your top line behaviors, your bottom line behaviors, let's go through every guy you've ever been involved with that has any sort of significance to you, and I want you to list out what was good, what was bad, where do you, it was like the gauntlet, like it was right. It was, yeah, it was a lot, but part of that was the ideal. And then she goes, you deserve to have absolutely everything that you want. If you want a man who eats pussy, then if you come across a man.
I do.
I do. I was like, I mean, hello. Okay, no.
Who doesn't? But, who's like, nah, that ain't up my alley. I want a guy who dry heaves a little bit every time we talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. I want a guy who has no idea where the clitoris is. But
how about a dude just wants to go? He goes down with a clothespin on his nose. I mean, look, it's everybody.
Whatever you're into, you could ask for anything. You can ask the universe for anything you want.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
It's
interesting that, you know. So one of the things that while you were telling that story is just the ability to go, I'm gonna submit myself to the process and just do it. Because the whole thing is, if it doesn't work, whatever the fuck.
Yeah, and that's all this stuff is trial and error, all of it. Yeah.
What have you discovered about yourself through this process? The biggest thing you've discovered about yourself and how you handle relationships, Brittany?
I discovered a lot. I discovered that I think a big thing for me was, not to go back to not being present. You know, I was landing myself in a lot of relationships and not being present. And that's why things were happening, kind of, like off my radar all the time. And I wasn't clocking it until it was too late, or I was afraid in the moment. I was afraid in the moment to set boundaries. I always looked at boundary setting as like clingy or bitchy or all of these different things, when in reality, I never realized that setting boundaries was actually a whole, it was me. It was wholly me, you know, and it's like.
You're being too polite, like just even not realizing that you need boundaries. Like, I don't want to ask him to stop fucking my sister because I don't want him to think.
So it was that, and safety was a big thing, and it's safety in a lot of different, I mean, on the surface level, it was like, I needed physical safety, obviously that was a no brainer, but I learned that I was like, I want someone that like emotional safety.
Right. You
know, and stuff like that. And also too, all this shit comes down to what you were saying earlier too, like not loving yourself.
Yeah.
Like it's so cliche, and mainstream media makes it so like, love yourself.
Yeah.
Fuck that noise. That's not it. It's not it. It's like really, truly like knowing what you deserve and stopping at nothing to get it. Because so many of these things that we let slide in these relationships comes from some voice somewhere inside saying, I deserve it.
Now, here's a question for you. Your parents and stuff, like how did that manifest itself from your relationship with your parents? Is your dad still around? Your mom around? Were they together? What's that look like?
You know what's interesting? I they're together. They're together for 50 years. They've been together for 50 years. They're going to have their 46th wedding anniversary this Monday. They're very traditional. very monogamous, very, you know, so I grapple with, I think, looking at their traditional love model and finding ways to adapt it in a very non-traditional dating setting now in 2021, right? You know, because my parents are a lot older than me. So I think what I was raised with still exists, but I've needed to kind of like, okay, how do I take the values that they instilled in me and apply them now in 2021 as well? But, you know, another thing that I learned is it was less about my parents and it was more about like my upbringing and just like random kind of, now I don't want to go as far as to say traumatizing experiences with men, but this, if I were to give my parents anything or blame them for anything, this wasn't talked about a lot. Like, so I was kind of left to kind of go out there and determine. I knew I should be respected. I knew that I should have a healthy relationship full of trust and all these values. Like, I looked at them and stuff like that. But I kind of like, I feel like there was a distance. But, you know, we didn't have like intimate discussion about like, okay, what do you really want a partner to look like? Like, it was just like, well, he should respect you and he should have a good job and a good relationship with his family. But it's like that kind of shit. Like when I went out into the wild and started hooking up.
Standard. Like, yeah. That's not a request. It's like going, what do you want in a car? Well, it should have four wheels. I mean, it should have an engine, ideally.
Correct. So many of these years I spent floundering and loving and investing in men that like treated me really badly and having these like kind of traumatic experiences because I was looking for this thing that I was distant from. Oh, he should respect me, have a good job, have a good relationship with his family. But it took a lot of stumbling and falling down to find like, okay, no, like really, what kind of a man do you want? Like, you know, like, what do you want? What are you going to stand for? Yeah.
And then you got to, the other part of that that's difficult is you got to be honest with that, even when it may be untraditional. So, you know, what's your nationality? Like, where are your people from?
I'm Italian.
Okay. Right. How many generations out of immigration?
Wow. Yeah. My mom and my dad were born here, but my grandparents onward were all born and raised in Italy and then eventually immigrated.
Wow, so here's something that I found to be true because I do the one-on-one consultations and stuff. And what I find is a lot of children from immigrant parents, because their whole point of coming here was survival. So there's never this. And look, I mean, you don't even know, like, I don't even know if you know whether or not your mom and dad is happy. Not to say that they're not or they aren't, but I'm saying that's just not something that was a priority. It's survival, you know?
It's co-parenting. It's building a life together. I mean, you took the words right out of my... Literally before you asked, I was about to be like, listen, I'm a second-generation Italian woman, and like Italian women, I see it in my family, are known to be very submissive, and that their role here is very... It's traditional to a fault. If there's infidelity, if there's pain, if there's anything, it's like, it doesn't matter. You stick it out. You hold the family together. So to your point, that's what I think was missing from my upbringing from my parents. I was never taught or given that space for what makes Brittany happy. Right. What does happiness look like romantically? Mm-hmm. I was taught that romantic happiness, quote unquote, was
is together, just being together.
Together. You're just together. And you stay together no matter what, for the kids, for the family. You make it work. He cheats, doesn't matter. You know what happens. You just slide it under the rug. All of these things that are not. Yeah. And you're right. Like, it's like, I love my parents to death. Like, listen, they are a unit. I admire what they've built together.
Sure. Well, I mean, the geniuses of today stand on the shoulders of the geniuses of yesterday. So you wouldn't even be able to actualize what you, and I mean, you're still exploring this idea of self-fulfillment and happiness. But if you didn't, you don't give a fuck about that when you're hungry. You know, when there's no roof over your head, you don't have time for self-fulfillment. I really want to try pottery. You know, you don't even have that.
And that's so funny because we get into arguments on, like, my mom goes, why is your dating life so complicated? And I'm like, because I think that yours was so simple. That's why you think it's so complicated. I was like, you just weren't considering the things that I'm considering today when you and dad picked each other or when you and
do they seem grandma. Happy together at least? Do you get the idea that they're happy or do you get the idea that they're roommates like a lot of immigrant parents?
They a little bit of both, I think. A little bit of both.
That's roommates. Yeah. That's mostly roommates.
Yeah, I think they want a contentment and they have it. And then I also think, and it's fun. I live with them now thanks to the pandemic. And I think it's fun to watch two people deeply, deeply know each other and also be so fucking annoyed with each other.
Is it weird to live? Beautiful. To be back with them, because I can't believe I'm going to tell this story, but I got it. I just found condoms in the wastebasket, my dad's condoms in the wastebaskets, and they're Magnums. So fuck me. I don't know if I don't know why that
Magnums
bothers me.
Magnums on Magnum XL. Come on now. Yeah, we know the difference.
Listen, why you always got to cuck somebody, Dante? And enough that my dad's got a big prick that we can't we? Just enjoy that it runs in the family.
Big giant Armenian prick.
Daddy packing heat.
I guess he is.
It smokes. It smokes and wears acrylic sweaters. And it spits. It spits a lot.
It drinks whiskey. It has a mahogany bookshelf.
The whole thing. Yeah, yeah. It has to take its slippers off too when it goes near the carpet. Is the whole
thing.
Does
it drink uso?
Uso. A lot of rahi.
Rahi and uso. It's interesting because I remember you initially you said that you. It was really the complexity of the relationships, but it's funny. It's like when you take it the step back, it's really not. It's this other thing that you've learned and you're repeating it, and it becomes so innately part of who you are. Because I mean, when you look at your mother, you go, "This is." I mean, so picture you as a 3, 4, 5 year old. You're representation of what womanhood is that woman, and what a man is your father. Those are the two models that you have, unless you adjust those models as an adult, and then you just repeat this, you know, in your adult life over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you repeat it. And I mean, maybe there's some element of that with everybody. You know, it's like that's what you repeat it because that's what it is, you know. And then it takes a lot of this falling down and looking inward for you to then realize, like, I actually don't need to subscribe. Like, I had a friend push back on me on this because I always said that I was like, I really want to get married. And I was like, I really want to get married and I really want to have kids. And all he just asked one day, we were having drinks, and he just goes, why? Which is such a simple question,
but
it was just why?
Yeah.
And I really struggled with coming up with why.
Yeah.
And I said, it probably is because that's what I was raised with, and that was romanticized a little bit to me. But I also think now that I'm kind of finding my footing really sexually and romantically after going through all of these things, I'm also like, well, I don't necessarily need those things as long as all of these other things are here. And listen, all this shit is process of elimination. You don't know until you date somebody who fucks up your whole life. And then you're like, well, I know I don't want that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it's just going through every door.
But it's interesting because when you said something about the intimacy coaches, really to kind of ask that question, that whole process is asking why. But you know, and then, so in one sense you go, well, I know I don't want that, but not wanting that never gets you to what you want. So my wife will go, I'll go, what do you feel like eating? And she goes, and I'll go, how about pizza? And she'll go, oh, I don't want pizza. But that doesn't get us any closer to what it is you want. You have to really ask that question.
Yeah, it's like operating on the defense or then operating on the offense. And I think if you're right. Like, that's super important to be able to spot red flags and see what it is you don't want. But, like, there's something about this area of our lives. And, like, I can speak to it as a woman. I think women experience it a little bit more where we're, like, afraid to take control in this area, or we're afraid to, like.
In terms of what?
It goes beyond just, I know what it is I don't want. I think, I know me and my girlfriends, it's something that we bond over. It's beyond, I know what I don't want. And it's more so, like you said, being active rather than passive. Being like, and I'm going to go for what it is I do want.
Well,
like,
part of growing up as a woman is the idea of you want to have somebody come in and sweep you off their feet. The idea is that you don't even chase, really. You don't even ask any dudes out. You want dudes. So everything is waiting to receive. right? Yeah. So you're not accustomed to asking for what you want because you were waiting to receive and then dealing with it once you receive it, as opposed to going out and seeking it yourself, which is how
men hunt, women trap.
Yeah.
That's so true. And it's like, yeah, our fairy tales were all just like, what was she doing? Like, she was just waiting in a castle, like not even flicking the bean either. She's just waiting in a castle with her hair. She's just like, well, the day will come.
Yeah.
Where I'm rescued. That's it. And it's like, hello. Like, I want to see the Disney princess that is like, no, I'm going out every night and I'm putting myself out there and I know what I want. I want to see a Disney princess who dumps somebody. That's what I want to see.
Yeah. It's also interesting when your mom says, why is your dating life so complicated? And then when you just and what the answer is, mom, I'm way more complicated than you are. Is really what it is. This, I mean, so you said improv and stand up comedy and all these. So there's this. I'm quite sure your mom didn't do improv. I bet she didn't do.
I know. My mom, back in the day, she was a cosmetologist. She still has her license and everything, and she kind of does it on the side. But she was like, you know, hair. She used to work in salons and do hair and nails and. Worked in a salon in South Beach, and you know, a lot of that is like, yeah, I think you're right. Like, I am a more complicated person, you know. Yeah. Like, I tell her all the time, like, why aren't you working in salons anymore? You're a 67-year-old Spitfire. She's a fucking pit bull. Like, you know, got the energy. You could do it. You know, why aren't you? You know, I'm like, mom, I just live a much more. Or sometimes I get all the time, like, oh, you're so busy, dad, and I think you're so busy. You do too much. You're out every night performing, and I'm like. This is what I want to do.
It's what makes me happy.
But that's also because it was set up for you, because their generation was the first generation here. So they still had to struggle and set up roots and make sure everything is taken care of in the house and the family. And that sets it up so that you can go out and live a life and chase a dream, which they didn't necessarily have that option.
And they're going, you get a good man. He's got a good job. Sure, he cheats on you sometime. But he's got a pension. He backhands you. But you learn to shut your mouth and you move on. Yeah. You have your kids and you move on. Yeah.
Even my mom says that now, too. I just wish you would find somebody and just settle down. Just settle down. And I was like, I'm like, that just sounds so boring. And I'm like, what about finding somebody and opening up? Like, what about finding somebody and revving up? You know, like, I'm like, I go, mom, you have to think like, and I also think with traditional masculinity and stuff for dating, like, I'm like, you and daddy found each other. And part of daddy's appeal was that, like, my father did, like, his father died. Like his mom was not like, you know, wasn't really, didn't have a huge income. My father had to like step into a father and a leadership role, like really young, and got robbed of a lot of fun and like what it is he ideally wanted to do. So I'm like, mom, I'm like, I'm not searching for a partner in the ways that you are. If I just want somebody to like pay my bills, build a life with, and settle down with, honey, that's called being a sugar baby. Like, mom, that's, you know, I could find that really.
There's websites for that.
But it's funny because settling down, it makes it sound like it's a retirement tour. Like, just settle down and then you don't have to do any of this anymore. And that's where the fire goes out.
And I'm like, mom, it's much more complicated now because I am paying my own bills and I do have a career of my own and I have my own independent schedule. So I'm dating and seeking things and qualities and elements that I just don't even think were on your
radar. You're right. You're absolutely right. It's also an interesting thing when, like, so, you know, Italians as a culture, they don't do arranged marriages, but they do. Do you know what I mean? It's a unspoken, like, so, like, I'll do consultations
of anybody in the neighborhood. Right.
I do a lot of consultations with people from India, people from Asia, and there's a very, so it's an overt matchmaker thing or arranged marriage. With Italians, it's almost covert, where this is what we expect of you because of you, the respect that you have for these parents, the way you talk, you know, that's always, it's a fucking cyst on your neck that's always just laying there, and you don't want to disappoint them, and then it's this, you don't, you know.
Oh, always. There's an that element of control is there. You're very right. Like where it's like there. It's not if it's not an arranged marriage in the sense that they're going to force you or like pick who it is that you should spend your life with. Oh my God, you're going to be suffocated with guilt, yeah. guilt and expectations over who it is that this partner should be. And I mean, I see it. Listen, I'm a little bit more aware of it now too because my family, everybody in my family, plays by the book. Like, and it is very like Italian Catholic in that sense. Like, you know, I remember my cousin and her husband, they had an on and off relationship for many years. Everybody kind of knew they were going to end up together. They got a house when they got back together, immediately moved in and signed for a house together. She got pregnant. Then they got married. And my aunt goes, oh, she's doing everything out of order. My aunt goes. And I'm like, out of order. Like, what is the
disorder?
Order. Those sound like the lyrics of a Billy Joel song. Everything that you just described, like
moving out,
moving in, getting pregnant, the whole thing, the whole catastrophe.
The whole catastrophe. That's it. So I've already kind of been able to remove myself because I'm the only person in my family that's a comedian or has any kind of like off the beaten path career and lifestyle and everything. But yeah, you are, you know, and I think I learned that in the last couple of years that I'm like reconciling what it is I want to take from how it is I was raised. Because it's not all bad.
I get it. Yeah, I get it.
You know, I'm like, I respect a lot of what my mom and my dad built and I like a lot of these traditional values, but then, okay, what is it that I want that, you know, I can objectively see was missing from all the relationships that came before me? Yeah.
Right. And the rejection of those things that you don't want. It's interesting. I mean, Black people don't really have that as much. It's because you always read about being killed. So you don't really, you just kind of, there's really no.
That occupies a lot of time.
Yeah, there's really no framework, you know.
That's why a lot of Black people don't read The Secret. You know.
They don't really read The Secret.
I don't have the time to really go backpacking to Europe right now.
To find themselves. They don't take a travel year.
So I have a 1 year. I'm 54. I have a 1 year old, right? It's my first child. And my dad had me at 49. Now I have older sisters. Like I got this bitch in the next room. She's 80 and awful, but, it's neither here nor there. I was triggered. Sorry. And, but what's interesting is, you know, his you say it's not all bad. So my dad was he was 5'2", the smallest. He was the youngest of 16 kids, 8 boys, 8 girls, and he was born in 1920. So my oldest aunt, was born in the 1800s, and so I had this thing of, you know, my father really didn't have the emotional acuity to even broach these conversations in a lot of way. I mean, and then I have resented that a lot in my youth. But then I go, he grew up in Jim Crow. Like he grew up when there was separate. What if, like, you have to take that variable into consideration, forgive them for that, but still understand. But him, he was only 5'2", but a huge personality. I remember as a kid, we could not go down the street without people yelling from the outside, "Hey, Nero," and you know, just this kind of popular guy. So, I mean, the respect of the surrounding people was always something that was innately part of my understanding of what manhood was. The problem was he was grossly motivated by the acceptance of other people. Mm-hmm. And his acceptance of other people made him neglectful of me as his son because of the fact that once he had got, I mean, I was his son. And so, you know, you always want that you want the attention of it. So he had that. And so he didn't really care about that. He was always seeking the approval of strangers. And so, but my father has a street named after him and he has a park named after him. And so, but he's helped hundreds of thousands of inner city kids. He was a father to hundreds of thousands of kids, but he really wasn't there for me because he had me. I was there. You know what I mean? I was.
Oh, totally.
And so my old thing was, okay, like what you're saying is, what about this do I like? What about this that I don't like? And so I'm grow and I, you know, you got to kind of find the midway because my, and Harry will tell you that I don't give a fuck about people think, no, you know, not but you can't, thanks Harry. but to the same token, in order to be in that place where you don't give a fuck about what people think, you have to be self-monitoring. You literally have to be honest with yourself about your civility, your humanity, your kindness, because if you don't give a fuck, if you're not taking this information from the input from the outside, which I mean, I'm not saying I don't, but you have to be self-aware and self-scrutinizing to, was I kind? So I always say I wake up in the morning with the intention of putting my feet on the ground and moving forward with civility and humanity and empathy and kindness. If I'm not acting that way, or if somebody is bereaved or somebody's upset with something, then I have to ask myself, was this fair? Was this appropriate? And so I'm constantly doing that. And so you gotta, you know, because if you look, I'm trying to think what it approval is a saloon door. It swings both ways. So if you allow people to validate you, then you also allow people to devalidate you. So you ain't shit when they think you're shit, and you're great when they, and I don't want to give that kind of power away.
And also, I agree. And also, if you know, you always have to have your internal compass, like how you just said, like you're like, if you know, a lot of this too is like in the journey of becoming a comedian as well. Like that ability to poke fun at yourself comes from a level of self-awareness and understanding of the self and acceptance of the self. And there is this power in like, well, if I'm happy with myself or I'm able, I can make fun of the things about myself.
Right.
I understand myself. That's the golden ticket. Because then you're already removed from whatever it is anybody else has to say about you. Because anything they say, you could be like, yeah, I'm aware. I know I do that.
Right. And they don't have the power over you either.
They have no power now because it's like, well, I'm already aware that I do that. Thanks for noticing. I'm aware and I'm already 10 steps ahead by trying to manage it and work it. I live at home with my parents.
It's fine.
Wow, that's an old telephone.
I want to tell you, you got a hard out, but I want to say that funny, this is like, you know, I've been doing comedy 20 years and I realized funny is being able to, you have to be able to see what people see. And the funny is either the exaggeration of what is or the opposing side. So if the truth is here, funny is at either end of the truth, but you have to understand where the truth is first. And when you understand where the truth is, the funny is at either end of that. So
I agree.
Calling
it out and heightening it.
Yeah.
And calling it out so brutally and going in and unpacking it in a way that you're saying what everybody's thinking, or you're right. If on the other side of it, where it's
or
like,
it's something that they never thought. So I used to get on stage and say, I'd stand and people would look at me, and most comics don't look like me, and I used to go, why is the bouncer? People are looking at me like, why is the bouncer on stage telling jokes? And they would crack up because that's what they're thinking. And then the other side of that is, so I'm home reading The Secret, crocheting and drinking chamomile, and then that's funny because it's such the opposing thing. Brittany, I really fucking appreciate this. This was a great conversation. I would love to have you on again. Love to see you when you get back in town.
I would love that. Yeah, I'm gonna be back in mid-June. I would love to hang out with you guys and do another stint. Yeah, let's do it.
Absolutely. Tell me what you want to plug. Anything you want to plug?
I'm on social media at Brittany Brave. I'm mostly in Miami now, but I'm going back and forth to New York and other places. And I have a web series called The Disastrous Dating Life of Diane DeMone. And it's pretty funny. 2 episodes are out now. We're going to roll out another one soon. And it's about a young Italian girl with a big heart who loves hard or fights hard and is 2 feet in and 2 feet out. And I read the script when it was presented to me, and I was like, hit me. Here we are. So,
I feel like your mom wrote that script and she left it in a chest next to her wedding, next to her wedding dress, and you just found it.
I think she called the creator, the director of the show, and she was like, just cast her in this. She needs to see herself through art. So just please write this show about her. But we're really proud of it, and it's on Vimeo, and it's funny. And yeah.
So you have been a fucking joy. Harry, talk to me.
You can check out all my social media at Harry Trajanian. That's all it. Find us on Patreon at manschool202, patreon.com. In fact, Dante and I are probably going to do something now over there. And also check out the TikTok, the YouTube channel, Instagram. We're all over the place. Find us, manschool202. We're pumping out content, and we thank you for joining us.
Check out Andre. Andre wasn't here today because he had to take care of some stuff, but Andre D. Thompson, check him out. His podcast is Slouch Theory. Everything with me is Dante Nero, the Dante Nero, some form of that. DanteNero.com. If you need a consultation, you can go DanteNero.com, click on consult. Check us out on the YouTube channel. GYBB, get your balls back. WWDD, what would Dante do? The sexual revolution is being podcasted. I love y'all, man. We're gonna go behind the scenes, do some questions and stuff. Brittany, thank you so much. You've been a fucking delight. Manschool 202 is created by Dante Nero, hosted by Dante Nero, with Harry Turjanian and Andre D. Thompson, produced by Harry Turjanian. Executive producers, Matt Kleinschmidt, Harry Turjanian, and Dante Nero.